The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I've said repeatedly since the first briefing over 10 days ago, there was no imminent threat to the United States that I believe would constitute putting our sailors and soldiers in harm's way.
How long is this going to last? Is it worth the blood and treasure that we're doing currently? You know, another poll, the handling of Iran, does it make us safer, less safe, no difference? Less safe is at 51%. So there is this skittishness or skepticism out there, even if you're wholeheartedly supporting what the military is doing every day.
And then yesterday, it appears we arrived from the Secretary of State and Speaker of the House that, well, actually, Israel wanted this war, and so we were led into it by them.
Well, Willie, a good rule of thumb is that if you hear a half dozen different rationales for why we're taking military action against another country, you probably don't have a good rationale. It sounds like the administration is just searching to find something to justify what is effectively a war of choice, where there was no imminent threat.
I hope it was the president's decision alone to do this, and that he wasn't arm-twisted by supporters or billionaire donors around him to do this. This is an extremely bold move. I don't know why it was decided that I had to do it now. I'm shocked, and I'm just wondering what political pressure was brought to bear for the president to make this, because this is certainly not what he campaigned on.
Why are you disappointed with what the president's actions have been?
If there is a viable ground force that could seize and hold terrain and control terrain, then I guess air power and a decapitation strike makes more sense to me. But clacking off against the leadership and leaving a real void right now, I'm concerned that it's going to ensue with a lot of chaos, because who knows what other weapons the Iranians have stocked away and they're going to unleash on the region.
So how exactly did the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, a military that the U.S. taxpayer pays for, that lots of wealthy Americans send money to friends of the IDF, how did all these guys wind up wearing patches suggesting the point of this war was the destruction of one of the holiest places in Islam and the rebuilding of a temple that is totally anathema to Christianity? Like, how did this happen? The main way it happened is because no one in the United States noticed, because it's such a secular place. And as noted, we have eyes but can't see and ears and can't hear. But this has been going on a long time in public through, in part, the efforts of a group called Chabad, C-H-A-B-A-D. And you may know people who give money to Chabad or run into Chabad, super nice people. Chabad has been pushing in a pretty subtle way, unless you look carefully, for the reconstruction of the Third Temple. And it seems like, from the reading we did recently, that those patches actually came from Chabad.
No one should have to die for a foreign country. I don't think those four service members died for the United States. I think they died for Iran or for Israel. Our government's job is not to look out for Iran or for Israel. It's to look out for us. And this feels very much to me like it is clearly Israel's war.
I had a light bulb moment this morning. I've had it before. It's not like it's brand new, but I just appreciated how unique our perspective is, God's work. As we look at world events, watch world events and pray always, a lot of these people, I mean, on any given day, you hear what they say and you're like, yeah, that's right. And then you hear something else the next day and you're like, what? Really? Blame it on the Jews, as you heard there at the end. Lots of pessimism to go around. And I mean, as you've heard on this show this week, there are good reasons to be pessimistic about the outcome of what's happening in Iran and in the region of the Middle East. But it's not for the reasons that you hear in cold opens like that. It's because of our sins. It's not because this show is all about appeasement and going the easy, lazy, complacent way. Our sins, that's what makes us so vulnerable. That's how we know that the outcome is not going to be good. But you don't hear this anywhere. You don't hear any commentators bringing this out. It's just a mixed bag every single day. And every day, it's just, it seems it's more and more mixed up. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this show at YouTube, our website, thetrumpet.com, or at Rumble. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily and verify that you're a human. And then you can watch the show live if you want to, or you can watch it after the fact on demand. So much to get to. It's been this way every day this week. So many different storylines. So much Bible prophecy being fulfilled. Right now, Israel, I mean, it seems like they're doing it quietly. It's not quiet if you live in Beirut. But they are pounding Lebanon at this moment. And evidently, the Lebanese government is A-okay with this. Hezbollah is about to be taken out. A year and a half ago, Israel took out Hezbollah's leadership. The problem, however, didn't go away. That would be a good lesson to review as we go into Iran, take out the leadership. And now there's this onslaught of pessimism. And now the New York Times headline, what was it today? Trump wants a quick victory in Iran, but the war may be costly. I mean, there's more of that just about everywhere you go on the news cycle. Six soldiers have died. Now, can we all agree that any soldier that dies, yeah, that's a tragedy. But you follow Megyn Kelly's reasoning, I mean, you would never fight for anything. Imagine someone in 1943 saying, listen, any American soldier that dies abroad, I forget what exactly she said there, but shouldn't happen. Think about how different this world would. I'll read you an article later about what the major media was saying back in 1943. Very different than what you hear today. Today, you have one soldier die, and that's it. Yeah, that's it. Operation's over. Blame it on the Jews. Blame it on, Shabab or whatever that is. Really some bizarre and deranged stuff coming out of commentators that a lot of times they're spot on. But just coming back to significant developments. A year and a half ago when Hezbollah's leadership's decapitated, my father wrote an article, this was covered in the morning brief, The Fall and Rise of Lebanon. Israel is doing nothing less than breaking Lebanon's ties with Iran. This is, I haven't spent enough time on this week, but the Psalm 83 Alliance. You know, it's prophesied Lebanon breaking away from Iran's influence. Same with Hamas. In the morning brief, it says the job wasn't done a year and a half ago. Hezbollah was still there, still active. Shortly after American and Israeli attacks on Iran began on February 28th, Hezbollah launched rockets and drones into northern Israel. The Israelis sprang into action in retaliation, and the conflict escalated quickly. So Israel, as they have to do, they're hurrying and they're making great gains yet again, taking out Hezbollah. And meanwhile, Trump and his administration, they're having to answer the onslaught of pessimism from both sides of the aisle, from Democrats and Republicans. What are we, 6 days in, 5 days in? They were talking earlier this week about 4 or 5 weeks. Is it even going to last for a week? Here we've got a piece. I'm not sure if I'll have time to get to it. GermanForeignPolicy.com. Going on and on about international laws being violated. More and more wars are being fought. They start with assassinating the leader. How dare Trump do this? And Mertz to follow, to not denounce what Trump is doing. You wonder what happened to German foreign policy. As I say, it's a mixed bag from one day to the next. It used to be, we quote from them years ago, where they were keeping their eye on, they didn't call it this, but the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, led by Germany. I mean, now, though, I mean, they've got some Trump derangement. Maybe the founders of that site sold it to the same people that Drudge sold his site to years ago. Totally different message. Beholden to advertisers, afflicted with Trump derangement. It's happening every day. You wake up, you hear them say this, you're like, what? And then the next day they say this, and you say, that's right. On that, they're right. It shows you how desperately we need God's perspective. We need God's view. Proverbs says, without vision, the people perish. We have to see. We have to see what God sees. We have to consider the end. I went through a forum on that this morning. Consider the latter end. You know, where is this leading? I talked earlier this week about the end game. It's easy to start wars, but, you know, how does this end? Are we going to send in the Kurds? Are we going to supply the Kurds with weapons as if we haven't done that before in Middle East history? Is that going to solve it? Do the Persians love the Kurds? What do the Kurds get in return? Do they get their own state? Somewhere in, you know, Western Iran or where? You know, how do they benefit? Are they going to be left high and dry? I mean, the Kurds, they've got some fighters among them. And they always have a little bit of support from America for a time. And then usually they're left high and dry. Yes, we need boots on the ground to carry out this mission, to finish this mission. But they can't be American boots, so what do we do? What will be the end game? There is, as I say, there is cause for some pessimism here. But it's not because of, you know, what Megyn Kelly or Tucker are saying. It's because of what's in this book. It's because of the sure word of Bible prophecy. It's because of what's been happening since the end of World War II. America hasn't been able to win any wars. And you can see why. I mean, we were losing tens of thousands of Americans in World War II, and you had the major media saying, listen, this is the time to double down. We need resolve. We need to stick this out to the end. And now, you know, one serviceman member dies in combat, and that's it. That's it. It shouldn't even be one. What a difference. I mean, these are journalists that have been educated at Columbia University or wherever for generations now, two, three generations, educated on this left-wing idea. Just withdraw, isolate. I mean, America had that trouble even in the World War II era. We were bombed into the war. But once we were in, I mean, once you, for German foreign policy to be saying, America better abide by international law, where are they saying, I mean, are they even saying that? When Iran is murdering Jews and Americans, when Iran is shipping all these IEDs to Iraq so that Americans can be slaughtered, or when they're bombing barracks in Beirut, or when they're taking Americans hostages. I mean, there's been a long history of Jew hatred, of American hatred, of crimes against humanity. And then you read German foreign policy today, and it's as if the only one that's held to the standard of the so-called international law, whatever that is America, and we mean especially the Jews. Did you know that the Jews were indiscriminately bombing people of Gaza? They're probably doing it in Beirut right now. For so long, we held off going after the king of the South, the head of the snake, 47 years. And you look at the media reaction today, all the pessimism, all the criticism. I mean, the Democrats are practically openly hoping America loses this war effort because they hate Trump. They hate Trump more than they hate America's enemies. Says a lot about that party. Trump derangement. And here's Trump. I mean, there have been some pretty awesome. It's a push button war, as we said earlier this week. But I mean, taking out the Navy and, you know, getting control of the skies over Iran in just a matter of days. This is pretty impressive. But this hostile media, and of course, together with it, a war-weary public, even in the MAGA base, tired of those foreign wars. So here's all the Trump people. I mean, just having to walk ever so softly, as if they're walking on eggshells, making sure that they're trying to explain what they're doing. And as I said yesterday, even that's not maybe as clearly outlined as it could be. But that said, the appetite for war, it's certainly not there. No stomach for it. The New York Times says, as President Trump uses U.S. military force overseas, his calculation has been that he can launch military operations with the loss of few American lives and minimal disruption to the economy. The opening days of the war in Iran are challenging that assumption. The Times is saying, and you know where the Times is at with respect to all things Trump, but they're basically saying, you know, he had his success in Venezuela with Maduro, and, you know, now just a quick strike, in and out, everything's done, it's all solved, it's all obliterated. Before deciding to launch a new round of missile strikes against Iran on Saturday, Mr. Trump had been emboldened by what his administration views as a string of swift military achievements. As long as you can get in there and you don't sacrifice American lives and you get a quick victory, then everything's good. He was running high, says the Times. He felt untouchable. It says, if it really is the plan to start arming ethnic separatist groups and try to balkanize Iran, not only would that be a proxy war at a scale at which the United States has never engaged before in the Middle East, that will impose incredible costs to the region. I mean, they're alluding to, you know, sending in the Kurds. And so there are a lot of, you know, complicated issues that they're having to sort out. And there's good reason. If you've read He Was Right, I mentioned U.S. and Britain in prophecy, there is good reason, looking at it from a prophetic standpoint, to give a forecast that can seem very pessimistic. It's not going to end well. But listen, we've got the sure word of Bible prophecy on our side, and also recent history. Look at Iraq, look at Afghanistan, look at Vietnam, look at Korea. What has happened to the great and powerful United States of America since the end of World War II? I played that clip from President Trump back in 1980, where he said, you know, we should have gone right in there as soon as they took Americans hostage in 79. But we didn't. And so we've waited and we've waited. We've waited almost a half century. Now we go in. There's not a super clear end game. And then just the resistance, not even from Iran, the resistance at home. That's always America's biggest enemy. The enemy from within. Division on the inside. So much weakness. We've talked this week about America's broken will. And really, when you step back and look at the bigger picture, that's what we see. The will is broken. It's broken because of sin. Sin is the cause. As I say, you look at He Was Right. You look at what Mr. Armstrong was saying all those years, and you see just how sure the word of Bible prophecy really and truly is. Here's Mr. Armstrong from 1984, clip 4.
And I will break the pride of your power, and that's after the 7 times punishment. And God has broken the pride of our power, and the United States has won the last war it's ever going to win. Listen to me, brethren. The United States has won its last war. We will not win anymore. God did win the First World War for us, and then the Second World War. But He did not win the Korean War for us, nor the one in Vietnam. and he is not going to win in Central America. And he is not, he did not win when we tried to send a task force over to rescue our people in Iran. About, let's see, that's about 3-4 years ago now. They met a terrible defeat.
Terrible defeat, that hostage rescue operation under President Carter. The Wall Street Journal has a piece today, The Washington-Iran War Pessimists. And it brings up some important history. It says, when the Marines headed toward the beach on the Tarawa Atoll in 1943, things didn't go well. The tide was lower than expected, so the landing craft were hung up on a reef. Marines became easy targets for the Japanese, and hundreds died that day, with more than 3,100 killed or wounded in a four-day battle. We shudder to think what the reaction would be in Washington if the Battle of Tarawa were fought again today. The New York Times, listen to this, the New York Times wrote after the battle in 1943 that we must steel ourselves now to pay the price going forward. This was the New York Times a little more than 75 years ago, maybe 80 years ago, saying we've got to go forward. It's worth the price of American blood even. Today it would be calling for Franklin Roosevelt's impeachment, as would a parade of outraged right-wing podcasters. Even the right wing. What has happened to the American media? When did we become so pacifist, so weak, so steeped in conspiracy theory, so quick to blame Jews or to blame some Jewish organization or the Jewish lobby? Listen again to Mr. Armstrong. I mean, here's the root cause of what we're seeing. The root cause of this attitude, this mindset. This is clip 5.
Little weak nations now are beginning to boast that they are strong. The strongest nation on the face of the earth, or at least that was, maybe Russia is now, but it's only just a very few short years ago that the United States undoubtedly was the most powerful nation on earth. But we have lost all the pride in our power. And we're too timid to use it even if we had to. And beside, God is no longer blessing this country at war. And this country has won its last war. I'm telling you.
God is no longer blessing this country in these war efforts. And you look at the media coverage today, quite unlike what it was in 1943. I mean, you would, just in reading the morning news headlines, just in reading the morning news, you would think that we're losing on every level. 5 days into the war, you'd think from the coverage, says the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. is losing. Financial markets are said to be in turmoil. The war is engulfing the region, maybe the world. The U.S. is running out of missiles. The war is a gift to Russia. And there's no plan for how this ends. And, you know, a lot of that criticism is partly true. But there's definitely no, you know, rah, rah, get behind the American effort. Finally, retaliation for all of these American soldiers that were slaughtered by Iranian weapons in Iraq 10, 15, 20 years ago. There's none of that. There's a lot of self-hatred. There's a complete loss of pride in our power. It's true that war is unpredictable and one could, and this one could take bad turns, says the journal. The 6 U.S. dead and others wounded are heartbreaking, but judging from the Beltway panic, you'd think America is destined to defeat and deserves it. Rarely have so many seemed so eager to predict American humiliation. And here again, it's reading stories like this where, as I said earlier today, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, God's perspective is utterly unique in the news cycle. The sure word of Bible prophecy, it really does enlighten us. It keeps us informed. It keeps us ahead of the curve, always, because it's sure, it's certain. This article goes on to talk about how the last 5 days have actually gone better than expected. Now, for President Trump's part, a lot of times you'll hear about it's just going so swimmingly well. It's just over the top, exaggerated, the success, the unprecedented nature of these victories. I've got a clip of him. This is, I believe, from yesterday, President Trump saying how well America's doing in this effort. Clip six.
We're doing very well on the war front, to put it mildly, I would say. Somebody said, on a scale of 10, where would you rate it? I said about a 15. And we're going to continue to do well. We have the greatest military in the world by far. And that was a tremendous threat to us for many years. 47 years they've been killing our people and killing people from all over the world. And I think we have great support. And I think if we didn't do it first, they would have done it to Israel and give us a shot if that was possible.
Here again, there have been some pretty big successes. The problem is they're not going to last. The problem is that America historically has, certainly since the end of World War II, we haven't gone in for the closing finish. This is from the Wall Street Journal on how the war has gone better than expected. Iran's political and military leaders were killed in the first hour in a remarkable display of intelligence collection and precision bombing. Iran's missile stocks, its launchers, and production are gradually being destroyed. Its navy may soon be reduced to a few fast skiffs if they dare to leave shore. The Pentagon says U.S. dominance of the air is so complete that it no longer needs to use as many standoff weapons that fire from distance. And you had the Secretary of War earlier this week saying that, you know, the initial, you know, phase of this is finished. And now at least going forward, depending upon how long this lasts, I mean, it's going to be cheaper. We don't have to use all of these very expensive precision guided, you know, missiles to take out the leadership and so on. We've got control of the skies. But all of that said, I mean, someone was just telling me the other day, the tens of millions of dollars going into some of these sophisticated weapons, every single one that's fired. And then looking at it, you know, more broadly, the fact that, you know, we're spending about $900 billion on the military every year, but we're spending $1 trillion on interest payments. So, you know, how do we restore order? How do we get, well, the government's response to getting it to where interest is not as much as military spending is to increase the military spending by $500 billion. So as long as that's at $1.5 trillion and the interest payments are only $1 trillion, then you see it's back to balance. It's unsustainable. And every empire in history reinforces this lesson. We know from prophecy, it's not going to be sustainable. As for the markets, the surprise so far is how relatively mild the disruption has been. The journal says here, all of this looks like progress toward achieving the war aims that President Trump laid out on Saturday. So one of the few positive takes coming from the Wall Street Journal on what President Trump has been orchestrating and leading this past week. This is a clip from Fox Business this week, clip 9.
President Trump is ending that forever war and, in effect, in my view at least, he's saving the Middle East for freedom and prosperity, but he's basically saving Western civilization. Trump is rearranging the architecture of the entire world system. Mm-hmm. That's what he's doing. Trump is changing history. That's what he's doing. And the big losers here are China and Russia, and the big winners are the United States.
Can I ask you a question?
Allied with Israel, I'll say, in the Middle East, but I'm not going to include Europe.
We've been sitting on this program and sort of talking about, I don't want to say Europe is dying, but Europe's going the socialism way. They're slow to react. I was joking that over the weekend, someone in Europe said, okay, well, we'll reconvene on Monday, given the events on the weekend. There's no urgency. There's no innovation. There's no capitalism. Brian brought up a really interesting point yesterday. Does this neutralize Europe?
So some praise. I mean, he's, what did he say? Trump is rearranging the architecture of the entire world system. And he is. In a lot of ways, he is. But in the end, who will benefit from this most? Who? I mean, consider the latter end of these things. And really what you're seeing, I mean, and you saw it there in that clip, totally underestimating the power of Russia, China, and of course, Europe. Europe is just, I mean, Europe is nothing. Europe is weak. Europe is a socialist country that has no army, can't act, can't do anything, no economy, no sizable economy. And it's on both sides. I mean, the optimists that are heaping praise on President Trump, totally underestimating China, Russia, and Europe. And the pessimists, same thing. How unique is God's perspective? How important is he was right in the United States and Britain in prophecy? How important is it to identify our own nations in Bible prophecy? Who are we? What is prophesied? Why did we experience all of this incredible prosperity and growth and power starting just in the early 1800s for both America and the United States? It's all explained. America and the UK, I should say. It's all explained in the US and Britain in prophecy. And now we see so many of those blessings being taken away or turned to curses. Look at how the New York Times was completely supportive of that war effort in 1943. And it was on two fronts. It was sending American boys to Europe. It was sending them to Asia as well. And in some cases, it went really bad. Thousands of casualties. And the New York Times, for its part, saying, you know, we got to stick it out. We've got to defeat this enemy. We've got to do it for our own sake. We've got to do it for the sake of the Western world. Pessimism, this kind of pessimism, coming from the media today, whether it's from the left or the right, it's an indictment against our nation. It's because of sin. It really proves the point that we've been making on this program. So often, the fact that our sins are destroying us, God sees it as a sickness from within. And what you see in the cold open and with other media sources, you see the sickness. There's no strength. Leviticus 26 and verse 36. And upon them that are left alive of you, I will send a faintness into their hearts, into the lands of their enemies, and the sound of a shaken leaf shall chase them. And they shall flee as fleeing from a sword. And they shall fall when none pursues, I should say. I mean, where is our boldness? The proverb says the righteous are bold like a lion. You're definitely seeing more strength from President Trump than you saw from presidents in the 1980s, 90s, 2000s, and beyond. And he should be praised for that. Same with Bibi, with the rising lion spirit, now carrying into Lebanon. But I could bring to you just as many news clippings from Israel showing how Israel's divided. Showing how much sickness is in Israel. I mean, little Israel in the Middle East. I mean, in a lot of ways, you hear these pessimists and, you know, you agree with them to a point. This is not going to lead to total victory. It's not going to lead to regime change in Iran, a regime change that favors America, that supports America, that becomes an ally of America, to think that the Kurds or anyone else is going to go in there and bring about this American-style democracy or republic, I mean, that is foolish, foolish reasoning. The world we live in, you've heard all about it in the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy and from my father's Key of David program and from all of our literature. My father gave a show on the Key of David, the missing dimension in Afghanistan. This is from 2021. Listen to clip 7.
But notice verse 8, and the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many people as a lion. As a lion among the beasts of the forest, as a young lion among the flocks of sheep, who, if he go through, both treads down and tears in pieces, and none can deliver. Well, how about that? Here, America and Britain, at that time in their history, early in those wonderful birthright promises that God gave to America and Britain, and look what they were doing and how they were conducting themselves in the world, like a lion amongst the beasts in the jungle. Where is that lion today? What happened to America and Britain? If you look at what's happening in Afghanistan, you certainly don't see the lion of America and Britain or prophetic Israel in this end time. You don't see that. What happened? What has gone wrong? Why are we faltering?
Why are we losing? Why do these war efforts turn out so badly for the United States? Well, on the same show, I mean, he talked about what Herbert Armstrong talked about following the end of World War II. Why do we lose in Korea? Why do we lose in Vietnam? Why do we lose in Iraq, Afghanistan? Here's my father again from 2021, clip 8.
There is a spiritual dimension to this that we don't understand, and we need to understand it. If you look at Leviticus 26 and verse 19, it says when Israel reached the zenith of their power, that God says, I will break the pride of your power. You will have all kinds of power, but you won't have the courage and the pride to use it, and the honor, you won't have it. The greatest power ever, but they're afraid to use that power. And it's all going to lead directly into the return of Jesus Christ as King of Kings. That's what is going to happen.
Today is the, I think it's the 80th anniversary of Churchill's Iron Curtain speech from Fulton, Missouri, 80 years ago today, when Churchill shattered the illusion that communist Russia could somehow be trusted. Churchill said straight up, I mean, they're going to have to be confronted. They were an ally in World War II, an ally you really couldn't trust. But the rest of the world just wanted to, you know, believe everything had settled down and we were moving into a new age of peace. Churchill gave the world a wake-up call 80 years ago. He called the speech The Sinews of Peace because he thought America and Britain would have to be the two nations that hold any semblance of peace together, and that at times we'd have to use force to maintain peace. I mean, Churchill didn't understand the true source of peace, how that only God can bring that to this earth. But he certainly believed in righteous power, using power for right, subduing evil forces in this world, and there's plenty of them. This is a little tidbit from his March 5th, 1946 speech, clip 10.
A world organization has already been erected for the prime purpose of preventing war. You know, UNO, the successor of the League of Nations, with the decisive addition of the United States and all that that means, is already at work. We must make sure that its work is fruitful, that it is a reality and not a sham, that it is a force for action and not merely a frothing of words, that it is a true temple of peace in which the shields of many nations can someday be hung up, and not merely a cockpit in a Tower of Babel.
He's talking about the United Nations there. This has replaced the League of Nations, and we must make sure that the fruits coming from this organization, that they're a reality, not a sham, that we're not just deceived by words. Words like, well, we can't lose one soldier. Just hunker down and let the rest of the world burn. There actually has to be a force behind these peacekeeping efforts, because there's a lot, I mean, there's a Tower of Babel that you're dealing with. Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. My father commented on this speech that Churchill gave. This goes back to the Trumpet website. It's in the Royal Vision from July of 2020. A big flaw in Churchill's great vision. He quotes from Lukacs and Robert Rhodes, these biographers that wrote about Churchill. One of them saying, foresight in politics is rare, and it's usually a matter of fortune rather than genius. It says, perhaps, but at any rate, Churchill's foresights were historical rather than political. And then my father says, that tells you a lot. His foresights were not like those of other politicians. Why? Because they were historical. Churchill was steeped in history. He knew how to study what happened in the past and project that into the future. He knew that if you do what you did in the past, you will get the same outcome nearly every time. So Churchill used history as, you know, his sure word of prophecy. If we go back and do what we did before, it's going to be the same. Consider the end. And we have history to show us. It says, even as the war neared its end, Churchill foresaw the Cold War and tried unsuccessfully to prevent it. Just months after World War II, March 5th, 1946, that would be 80 years ago today, he gave his Iron Curtain speech, warning the West of the danger from Russia. He titled the last volume of his war memoirs, Triumph or Tragedy, the tragedy being the West virtually gifting Eastern Europe to Russia, empowering the communist and guaranteeing future conflict. It was guaranteeing future conflict. And yet we put it off into the future. So we thought, well, let's just see if we can get by with not confronting, with not doing, with not certainly not sending a soldier abroad. It says the media were practically unanimous in condemning this view. Churchill had just spent an entire decade warning them about the threat from Germany, and those warnings proved absolutely right. Still, he was ridiculed. He was ridiculed for what he said about Russia in 1946, and then almost every bit of it came true. He was right. He was a prophet. He's referenced in the first part of Ezekiel 33. And Isaiah 3 says that we just don't have leaders like this today. We don't have leaders with vision. We don't have ones that are steeped in history, that are studying the lessons of history, that are examining themselves, that are looking at themselves, that are considering the mistakes that we've made, that are humbling themselves before the mighty hand of God. That's what this world needs. That's what our nations need. It's a pretty big lesson from history. You look at what the end game is currently in Iran, and I mean, based on a lot of reports yesterday, again, as I touched on earlier, Now maybe the Kurds can help out on the ground. The Telegraph had this to say: airstrikes alone will not topple the Iranian regime. It's a message that the Trump administration has heard ad nauseum. 5 days into the war, the Pentagon appears to have its answer. There will be boots on the ground in Iran, only they will belong to proxy forces rather than U.S. soldiers. From the West, the CIA is working with Kurdish forces to prepare a ground offensive across the border with Iraq, according to CNN. We're still not sure if this has actually begun, but it was all over the news cycle yesterday. You can see that in this this montage here, clip one.
Multiple people familiar with the plan are telling CNN that the Trump administration is working to arm Kurdish forces, who they then expect to take part in a ground operation in Iran in the coming days.
The Iranian regime is like a hydra, right? So you cut off the head, which essentially they did with the leadership over multiple strikes. The problem is to really squash the regime, if you will, you have to have boots on the ground. That really endangers the lives of American troops. And so the reality is we have worked with Kurdish forces all over the Middle East, in Syria, in Iraq, and now potentially in Iran, to essentially be those boots on the ground. They have a vested interest in seeing this regime toppled.
We're learning new information about the Kurds, the Iraqi Kurds, the dissident group based in northern Iraq, preparing for a potential cross-border military operation into Iran. And there's a little bit of a fluid situation on exactly what's happening right now on the ground. From the New York Post, saying Iraqi Kurds, they have launched a ground offensive against Iranian regime. Reports, including from Fox News' own Jennifer Griffin, and she did clarify on social media, saying she is told that these Iranian Kurds who fled in the past have been living in Iraq. They have returned with the hopes of starting an uprising so that the people of Iran feel comfortable rising up against the remnants of the regime. U.S. officials confirmed to Fox News that thousands of Kurds have launched a ground offensive in Iran. They are crossing in from Iraq.
Now that the regime is becoming weaker and weaker, we see this as an opportunity to finally move towards achieving our freedom.
You read between the lines, and I think the other message to take from this is that the uprising in Tehran, the Iranian uprising, is not going according to plan. It's not happening like Washington thought that it would. So now you've got the Kurds coming in from Iraq, the factions from Iraq. The CIA is backing them. What could go wrong? I mean, you have to admire the Kurds and their willingness to fight. But they've also been disappointed with previous administrations of America that have left them high and dry. Is that what's playing out again? Is history repeating itself? Are the Persians just going to welcome them in with open arms? Or is there going to be just chaos? All these factions. We've seen this before in the Middle East. We've seen it before in Iraq and Afghanistan. And eventually what happens? America says, that's it. We wash our hands of this case. And then when you see how Europe's being dragged into this and how the Psalm 83 Alliance is coming into play and how Germany's becoming more, you know, vociferous and how Germany's allying itself with Israel, of all places, of all nations. And Israel, I mean, sending its prime minister's plane to Germany for safe haven during war. And the Arrow 3, I mean, that's in the latest Trumpet magazine. Israel supplying Germany with missile defense. Who could have ever imagined this? In 1943, who could have projected ahead 80-some years and said, you know, I see a time when little Judah, the nation of Israel, puts its faith, its trust in Germany for safety, and where Germany relies on Israel for its protection. This is man trying to make his way, not learning from history, obviously, just doing what seems right, trying things out as you go. The Telegraph says here, late Wednesday, the Iraqi Kurds launched a ground offensive across the border, this is from the Telegraph, into Iran. From the east, Pakistan-based Baluch Islamist groups have, in an effort to draw wider support, rebranded as the Popular Fighters Front. It's like something out of Monty Python. All these different factions with these different names saying their goal was to liberate Iran. And to the north, the plan to exploit the grievances of Iran's ethnic patchwork will hope to draw in the Azeris, who have led fierce protests against the regime. Together, these groups make up between a quarter and a third of Iran's 90 million strong population. The U.S. and Israel are inviting them to rise up. They're receiving encouragement from President Trump, from Israel. Yep, rise up. Let's topple the regime. You've got our air support. Now's the time to do it. An armed uprising would aim to empower the vast number of Iranian citizens whose efforts to overthrow the clerical establishment have only been thwarted to date by mass murder carried out by the parliamentary group and Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. It says the analysts warn of risks that the endeavor backfires and Iran is plunged into chaos and civil war that upends the Middle East for years to come. And really, and again, I know there's no appetite for this at all, but if it's this easy to get a few of these factions moving forward to actually move into Iran, to upset everything, to take down the regime, how much more clear and decisive and overwhelming would something like this be if America just said, you know what, we're going to use the same strong show of force that we've used with our push-button technology. We're going to bring in the resources on the ground and put a stop to this menace for good. But that's not going to happen, is it? It can happen. President Trump would probably lose half of his support this November in the midterm elections. And so it's being fought this way. It's pretty pathetic, really. When you consider it, I mean, when you consider it next to just a previous time, not that much more than 80 years ago, when there's a disastrous battle in, you know, the Pacific, and the New York Times is there to say, listen, we've got to stick this out. There's a cause here. This is worth fighting for. Our freedom is at stake. Those days are long gone. Now we're hoping that the Kurds will get in there and finish things off. Listen to this clip from News Nation, clip 2.
I do think that this could definitely change the tide and really topple the regime. But in the long run, do I think that it's good that we are working with them? Probably not. It never tends to go well when we do arm a lot of these groups. It usually devolves into infighting and fighting us, quite frankly. So I don't know that it will work out well in the long run. But yes, in terms of bringing down the entirety of the regime and invoking regime change, yes, it could be effective.
In other words, no one knows. Well, we do know. We've got the sure word of Bible prophecy that tells us it's not going to end well. And we say that not because we're pessimists in the sense that the New York Times is, or the New York Times. It's because of what God says about our nations, about Israelite nations, about Ephraim and Manasseh in particular. I'll just point you again to the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. I mean, this explains what we're seeing. It gives you the framework. It helps you understand a third of your Bible. It brings the Bible to life. This has gone out to more than 6 million households worldwide. Essential reading. Required reading, you could say. Same with He Was Right. We've got plenty more where that came from as well. All of our literature, as you know, if you've watched regularly, it's offered without cost or obligation. It's already been paid for. That's all we have time for this particular episode. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting, that would be this show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.